Pre-recorded, completely unscripted, and about as organised as the thought processes of some members of the Australian Senate, you're listening to news, views and opinions on events from here at home and around the globe on politics, business and society in general. This is the Iron Fist and the Velvet Glove.
Welcome back, listeners. This is the Iron Fist and the Velvet Glove, and we are up to episode 30. With me, of course, is Scott, a.k.a. the Velvet Glove. How are you, Scott?
I'm very well, thanks, Trevor. And yourself?
I'm very well. So
I'm pleased to hear that.
Yes, it's been very hot in Queensland, but I've managed
to... It has been hot, yes. Yeah,
finding some air-conditioned places and scurrying from one to another and trying to stay out of the heat. So it's been good, and quite a few things have come up during the week, both locally and overseas, of secular nature. So we've got a bit to rattle through. So anyway, Scott, now I don't like to focus too much on America, but I've got a bit of a quiz for the listeners. So, dear listener, this is for you right now, your own personal quiz. So I want you to try and figure out which American state... had the following three things happen in the last week. So there was a day of prayer and fasting, and there was a pre-event in a sort of a Parliament House type of building, and opposite that they then had a marathon non-stop Bible reading for 72 hours. Then in the same place... there was a abortion prayer vigils, and basically where Christian groups were holding prayer vigils outside of a clinic that performs abortions, warning the clientele, of other options, in their words, and causing mayhem there. And finally, in the leadership of this particular state, the leader... prior to the start of their parliament, attended an ecumenical service, read from the Bible, including Philippians. Rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice, is what the leader said. And even the opposition attended the same function and made a reading from Matthew, which, as we all know, the Velvet Glove is good on his Matthew. And, and this opposition person said, ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find it. Knock and the door will be opened. So, you know, there's a lot of sort of hardcore Christian right-wing sort of states in the deep south of America. You're probably sort of thinking in that corner of the world. But remember, dear listener, this is this is an Iron Fist quiz. There's always a trick to this one. And of course, the answer is, Scott, that all of those events happened right here in Australia.
Yeah, it was a little bit disturbing when you sent me the email last week where you said Queensland's Day of Prayer and Fasting, and I thought to myself, good God. And it didn't really improve from there, did it?
No, it didn't. Like, these sorts of events, well, let's start with, there was a Queensland Day of Prayer and Fasting. So a group of Christians have managed to get access to a government building, which is beside the Parliament building in Brisbane, and hold a vigil. And, you know, I guess I'm okay with community groups using government buildings from time to time.
But just not a religious one, though.
Yeah.
Let's get right down to tin tacks here. Yeah. If you've got a religion, if you genuinely want a secular state, which we genuinely do, then we've got to be able to say, look, we shouldn't have religions on
government buildings,
government property. Yeah.
Actually, I'm with you there, Scott. That's a compelling argument. I'm with you.
Yeah. there's possibly an argument that you could say, you could let them use school buildings in it, that sort of thing. But not something like this. This was a blatant, call to arms.
Yes.
It really was.
call to prayer was what it was.
Call to prayer, yeah. Yeah, call to prayer. But, so. They were there and they were praying and fasting and that sort of stuff. And
yes.
Yeah, in a government building.
Mm.
Yeah. So
afterwards,
anyway.
Afterwards, they marched out to Speaker's Corner and held a 72-hour non-stop Bible reading marathon. And
72 hours.
Yes. So I considered, I had a few things on, but I considered signing up.
Yeah.
And just so that I could, you know, if they'd have me, you know, read read some of my favourite parts of the Bible where there's rape and murder and pillaging and cursing of ostriches and cursing of... it wasn't the olive tree, was it?
It was a fig tree.
It was a fig tree, and just a few choice things like that, and see how long they'd let me go before they realised I was pulling their legs. So I reckon next year, Scott, put that in your diary, and we'll have a go and see if we can sign up to do a bit of Bible reading, because it's an annual event and they do it all the time.
And,
just in the little blurb that they had in relation to it, some advice, it said, before coming, please ask God to reveal any issues of forgiveness or reconciliation or repentance that need to take place in your heart before you arrive. Also, seek God individually and in your churches for what is on his heart for the city, state and nation and how he wants us to pray. The theme for 2015 is Jesus. So, 2015, that must have been a... cut and pasted from a previous year, I think. So anyway.
I think so, yeah.
So that was the Queensland Day of Prayer and Fasting, and very American, isn't it?
It is very American, yes. Mm.
And also very American is in Western Australia, where this group, the Perth chapter of Christian group 40 Days for Life, planned daily, peaceful and compassionate prayer vigils outside a Midland clinic during Lent as part of a global anti-abortion campaign. So they're basically going to hound women outside of abortion clinics. What?
Yeah, I mean, like that in itself was just, it was really wrong when you read when you read into it and you sounded, what were they saying? They plan daily, peaceful and compassionate prayer vigils outside a Midland clinic. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, I'm not a woman, right?
Yes.
And I've never had to pay for an abortion or anything like that. I can imagine it would be an incredibly difficult thing to do.
Indeed.
And the last thing someone needs is someone waving a placard saying, look at your baby. You know, it's just absurd. It doesn't matter how peaceful and compassionate they claim they're being, they are in their face.
Yes.
You know, it's just wrong. It's really, really wrong. I don't know what to say other than I'm disgusted in it, you know? And to the point that it would be disappointing if WA is forced to introduce buffer zones as introduced in Tasmania to keep protesters from clinics offering abortions. You know, it's just absurd.
Mm. So apparently in Tasmania, they have buffer zones, which stops protesters from doing this sort of stuff around abortion clinics. And that you have to legislate that to stop these nutters from intimidating women. Again, it's very American, isn't it? Like, these people are reading
very American
blogs and stuff and going, oh, that's a good idea. Let's do it over here.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Western Australian doctors have attacked the plans, and the AMA, Western Australian president, basically objected to their plan, saying it was going to cause psychological stress on people who don't deserve it. And that's his, you know, so that's the AMA president saying that it could cause women unnecessary psychological stress. Meanwhile, this nutter Christian religious person, Joanne Ciccini, the coordinator, said the group, which will carry signs and brochures, did not want to cause anyone pain, but hoped to change hearts.
Yeah, I mean, like, what did they think they were going to achieve by being there? You know, they were going to be causing people pain.
Yes. Oh, well, they say they're offering financial support for counselling, legal advice and parenting courses. We are there to offer, I'll just read this to make you feel ill. this is the same lady. We are there to offer women a lifeline before she is about to undergo a procedure that could hurt her spiritually and a decision she may deeply regret, she said. People entering the clinic can tell by my positive messages of hope and help on my t-shirt and signs and my friendly face that I am not there to cause them any pain.
Oh, please. You know, I mean, it's just, it's really, I don't know if incredulous is the right word or what the word is, but it's incredible that they would honestly believe that they're not causing any pain.
Yes.
It's absurd.
Thankfully, these people are reading the Bible, and, you know, that's where you can get your good moral guidance from, and that's what they're getting from the Bible, you know, of what's right and wrong, for goodness.
Well, you know, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's attacking an ostrich like that. Yes. It's an ostrich, isn't it?
Yes, it was an ostrich.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the third thing I mentioned there, Scott, was, of course, prior to Parliament resuming, there's a traditional ecumenical service. The Malcolm Turnbull and Bill Shorten attended, and they both had a few words. The article I've got here, Mr. Turnbull delivered an upbeat reading from Philippians. Rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice. And Shorten had a reading from Matthew. Like, oh, for some politician to just boycott that sort of stuff and say it's a load of codswallop and why would I waste my time?
Exactly.
But
it really is absurd.
So there we go. You're not in the deep Midwest of the US of A. You're in the deep south. You're in the Bible Belt. This is all in Australia, all in the last week.
Yeah.
Goodness me.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yes. Meanwhile, Scott, we have a new poll out. Did you read that poll?
I did read that poll, and it did bring a smile to my face, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Media release, 78% want religion out of government. National poll in January shows 78% of Australians don't want religion and social policy mixing. 72% think the Constitution could clearly separate church and state.
Yep.
So that was very good.
Yes. So that was a poll that was commissioned by the Rationalist Association of New South Wales and by Plain Reason. And Plain Reason is a group organised by Bill Morris, who wrote the book Sacred to Secular. So so anyway, they commissioned that, and that's 78% saying that they don't want religion dictating social policy. So these right-wing think tanks, Lyle Shelton and all those sorts of people at the what's it called again?
Australian Christian Lolly?
Yes. Please, politicians, stop paying attention to these people, because 78% of Australians don't want you to.
Exactly.
Mm.
You know, this is the maddening thing that I find incredibly frustrating about all of this. You know, we're going to talk about gay marriage, but gay marriage and voluntary euthanasia, they're two hot button issues that really the public's already behind anyway.
Mm.
It's just a matter of getting our bloody politicians to understand that the churches don't speak for the majority.
Yeah. You know, Scott, if we ever got a few senators in, I reckon...
Oh, yeah, they'd be forced to listen.
Well, I reckon we'd have a crack at trading votes for getting a referendum on changing the Constitution. Like, it wouldn't worry me if the referendum failed, but just to have the discussion to beef up our Section 116, because Dear listener, you'll remember from previous podcasts, our Section 116 is not that different from the American one, First Amendment, I think. And a couple of words here or there could make all the difference to the sorts of things with the chaplaincy stuff that goes on. The funding of chaplains by the federal government could be stopped, and federal government's funding of the Pope's World Youth Day in Sydney, there's $20 million. Like, there's all sorts of things like that where we're spending money, and I reckon if we could put it in the Constitution, there's a goal, Scott, that we could aim for.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a lofty one. So that was that. Are you on Facebook much, Velvet Glove?
Yes, I don't actually post very much. I tend to read everyone else's stuff.
I'm on it a fair bit because I've subscribed to all these different atheist secular sort of sites, and you get a lot of good stuff for this podcast, so I'm kind of committed to it. But of course, one of the things that came out recently was this Be Like Bill meme that went around.
Yeah.
Plug in your name and it'll say something pithy about you. And of course, what somebody's done or created was Be Like Bill, but with religious entities as the name. So, actually, I think this one of Jesus is probably the poorest of the lot, but it says, this is Jesus. A lot of people say Jesus is a good guy. But Jesus did not come to bring peace. Jesus brought a sword. Don't be like Jesus.
Be like Jesus, yeah.
You can go ahead with one. You got one in front of you?
Well, just so that we don't, we can't be accused of being completely anti-Christian.
Yes.
This is Muhammad.
Yes.
Muhammad doesn't post pictures of himself online. Muhammad won't let you post pictures of himself either. Muhammad will have his followers kill the infidels who do. Don't be like Muhammad.
Yes.
You know.
I like that. This is Abraham. Abraham loved the Lord. Abraham nearly killed his son Isaac because the Lord told him to. Don't be like Abraham.
This is my favourite. Yeah. This is Thomas. Thomas has doubts about Jesus being resurrected from the dead. Thomas has to see and feel Jesus' wounds for himself to believe it. Thomas is a good skeptic. Be like Thomas.
Yeah. I think that's my favourite as well, is the Thomas one. Always. And there's a few others. So people can click on the link and there's something good to come out of the Be Like Bill meme. So that's good.
Yeah.
South Australia and oaths. Scott, did you read that one?
South Australia and oaths.
Yeah.
No, you didn't.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So
go for it.
Here's a new one then. So the South Australian government is considering scrapping religious oaths in court. So,
well, that's about bloody time.
Yes.
Yeah.
So apparently they've just received some 11 recommendations in a report from the South Australian Law Reform Institute. And if they implement these, it would be a nationwide first. So at the moment, people can swear on the Bible to tell the truth, or they can just affirm that they will tell the truth.
Yep.
And it's actually not done through legislation. It seems to be a case of just custom as to how these are done. So the Law Reform Institute spoke to all sorts of different groups and faith groups and other people and concluded the overwhelming view is that the current language and the current approaches were not working. And Professor Williams said that one of the problems is, if you're going to swear on the Bible, you're sort of declaring that you're a religious person and people might not want to do that. Openly. Yeah. So it's sort of a breach of privacy in that sense that you're sort of forcing on people. So anyway, the report made 11 recommendations, including that there shouldn't be a choice. It just should be a single form of promising to tell the truth. And it should definitely be a promise in a non-religious in nature. And it should be prescribed in law and blah, blah, blah. So anyway, swearing on the Bible, if they adopt the reforms suggested by the South Australian Law Reform Institute, could be a thing of the past in South Australian courts. How good would that be?
Well, that's a very good move, yeah.
Yeah.
So. It really is. I mean, so it's currently not backed up by legislation, you were saying?
No, it seems to be a matter of... I wasn't aware of this, but I think it's a matter of practice, like that part of the common law, that people swear to tell the truth, either on the Bible or an affirmation. And, so they're looking at actually codifying it and making it one option or no option, just one form of promising to tell the truth and being non-religious. So a good idea.
Well, I think it's a very good idea, yeah.
Hmm. So that's something positive. Mm. Scott, I reckon, well, I've put here on our running sheet, dear listener out there, if you're listening to us and you're thinking, God, why don't they ever talk about topic A, B, C, or D, and you reckon you've got a really insightful comment to make or a little discussion you'd wish you could join in, then here at the Iron Fist Velvet Glove, we're willing to give this a go, where maybe you could send us a message on the Facebook page or the website, and we'll call you during our podcast and we'll record the conversation and you can appear on the podcast. So if you're interested, how does that sound, Scott?
I think it sounds like a great idea. Yeah. I mean, there could be people out there who, you know, for example, Anne, when she was, disagreeing with us on penalty rates.
Yes.
She could ring in and join us on the podcast and, put her position forward.
So all you'll need is a Skype connection and we'll record your voice over Skype and you'll be part. So we do it on a Wednesday night, Queensland time, after 7:30. So if that suits you and you want to join the podcast, send us a message, tell us what you want to talk about, and we'll be in touch. So see how that goes.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea.
Mm. Next on the agenda, you know, remember a long time ago, it seemed like a long time ago, Scott, that we called Tony Abbott, you know, the gift that keeps giving.
And I
complained that I went away on a holiday. I come back and, you know, I didn't complain that Abbott was gone, but I was complaining about the possible loss of material for the podcast. And incredibly, despite being flung onto the backbench, he is still the gift that keeps on giving.
He is the gift that keeps on giving, isn't he?
Yes. You know, what's he up to, Scott? Have you got it there?
Okay. Well, the listeners out there would have already heard this. He has been and fronted the US Alliance Defending Freedom.
Mm.
The Alliance Defending Freedom is a group that's not a lobby group. It is a group that, where does it say that in the conversation? The Alliance Defending, unlike lobby groups, which typically work to influence legislation, the ADF aims its arrows at the judiciary. So what it tries to do is it backs court cases.
Yes.
And they've got several...
They're responsible, lobbies. Scott. People would have heard perhaps of the Hobby Lobby case in America.
Yes. Where, and they were...
They were part of the funding of that sort of case. So,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and abortion-type issues, they'll try and fund test cases and take it to the Supreme Court. And so they're a nasty, wicked... ultra-conservative, right-wing group, and they're right up Tony Abbott's alley.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. You know, it was. I remember at the time when it was first reported that he was going to be talking to them, I thought to myself, well, you know, he's entitled to say whatever he wants and get whatever he wants off his chest.
Mm.
But then you actually start to read a little bit more about what the Alliance Defending Freedom is, and then you realise that actually, no, it's not the sort of organisation you should have anything to do with. You know, it's a bloody terrible, terrible organisation.
Yes.
Abbott declared we need less ideology and more common sense, but reaffirmed his strong opposition to same-sex marriage.
Less ideology.
Yeah, I know, exactly. He urged policymakers to pass on the institution of marriage undamaged to future generations and said most children would prefer being raised by mother and father.
Yes.
Well, you know what? They may well prefer it. But, you know, we're not even talking about adopting or anything like that, because you can still adopt children whether you're in a same-sex relationship or not. This is just simply a way of people being in same-sex relationships being able to solemnize them. You know, it's just absurd.
It's
anyway.
It's terrible. But his stance has drawn a swift rebuke from his openly gay sister. And
yes.
what a complicated Christmas day they must have in that family.
God. Well, yeah, I mean, like he did bring up the fact that two of his sisters are divorced. They've yes. both moved on, and one is in a same-sex relationship now.
Yes.
You know, it's incredible that, it would just be embarrassing to say this is my brother. Mm. But, you know, I did like the cartoon, yes. Mm. Cartoonist John Shakespeare comments on Tony Abbott's plans to tell a conservative Christian group in the US that allowing same-sex couples will contribute to the erosion of the family.
Yes.
You know, it's the Tony-saurus. You know, it's hilarious. Yeah. But
So the comic has basically got a picture of a reporter with Tony Abbott's sister, and the reporter is asking the sister, do you agree with your brother that gay marriage will cause erosion of the family? And she responds, his speech certainly has. Yeah. But Scott, yeah, while we're on the topic of gay marriage then,
yeah,
and the plebiscite, you know, I'm sure you've got some things to say about what some politicians are saying about,
well, it's,
about
it's
the
ridiculous.
Plebiscite and whether they're going to listen to it.
Well, it's absolutely absurd. Like, you know, you've got Ryan Imps, the Liberal National MP, who's the advocate of same-sex marriage, slammed the Senator's stance as bizarre and extraordinary. Well, you know, I would have used heavier language than that, but he's dead right. These were the guys who were instrumental in wedding the coalition to this ridiculous policy of having this vote, and then they're going to turn around and say, well, we're not even going to listen to it.
Yes, folks, that's what's happening. So the politicians have said, you know, it's not right that the politicians decide, let's put it to the people for a plebiscite. And, of course, some of the politicians are saying, well, if the plebiscite says that it should be legalised, I'm going to vote against it anyway. So the likes of Erica Betts and Corey Bernardi and various others.
Corey Bernardi and a few others.
They're just going to ignore the plebiscite anyway. And Malcolm Turnbull has come out and said, well, we're going to follow the plebiscite. That's what we said we would do. But he can't control these nutters. So they're just going to, they control their own vote.
Well, that's it. I mean, like, you know, it was a good, I remember at the time when Turnbull reworked his front bench, I thought to myself, you beauty, you know, he's moved all the nutters on.
Yeah.
The problem is, you know, the nutters, when you move them onto the back bench, they can do and say whatever the hell they want to.
Mm.
And you then end up with this ridiculous situation blowing up in your face.
Mm.
You know, it's just absurd.
Mm.
It really is just madness that you've got, you know, they could well take the position that Concetta Ferravanti Wells has. Certainly I'm somebody who has advocated for all Australians to have a say. Clearly I'll be bound by what all Australians have to say.
Mm.
I don't believe the majority view will support change, but if that's not the case, then of course I would support that.
Yep.
You know, she has outright said, and she's on the record in the party room and outside of the party room saying that she doesn't believe it's the right thing to do, but she's also said that if the majority of the Australian population want it, then it's up to the elected representatives to get out of the way and just vote for it.
Mm. Yep.
Yeah.
It's a fair enough position. You can state your personal situation and then, but then also acknowledge the decision of the people.
Well, that's exactly it. You know, I mean, if we're going to have this nonsense, I mean, it's $160 million we're talking about, you know, throwing up against the wall. And it's got to be, if we're going to have it, then we should stick with it.
Well, you know, the truth is, it was just a delaying tactic by the forces against it. And they were successful in delaying it. And, you know, it wasn't about right and wrong. It was about just delaying it. So they achieved.
Yeah, agreed. Mm. Yeah, they've achieved that.
Mm. So it'll be interesting to see how Turnbull handles that when various members of his party vote against the plebiscite's decision.
Well, it will be. You know, it will be very. It will be very interesting to see how he does handle.
Mm.
I would imagine he will. He'll probably handle it the way he's handled everything. He's just allowed things just to happen. You know, he's certainly. He's certainly a much calmer individual than the last one.
Yeah, he hasn't really stamped too much of his own views on things yet, and in particular, no. Scott, the Republic. You know, this is the guy who led the pro-Republic debate, I don't know.
In 1999?
Yes, and now he's Prime Minister. I don't hear him saying too much about it.
No, he's gone onto the back burner on that, that's for sure. He has said that he said things like, you know, this has got to be a movement from the people and that sort of stuff. He doesn't want the politicians to impose it. He wants the public to demand it. And, you know, I can sort of understand where he's coming from that point of view.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll just have to see how it goes.
Mm.
But I would have thought that he could have some favourable words to say about it.
Mm.
But unless he's got National Party problems, I don't know. But
well, Scott, I introduced that topic because it's now time for the quiz.
Oh, dear. Okay.
And since last week, we've had some opinion polling from Essential Report. And so, Scott, we'll see how close you are to your finger on the pulse of the Australian public. So,
okay.
On the question of the Republic, and dear listener, wherever you are, play along as well. See if you can do better than the Velvet Glove. On the Republic, question, are you in favour or against Australia becoming a republic? And so we've got how many in favour, how many against, and how many no opinion?
No opinion would be 10%. Probably 30% would be against, and the balance 60% would be in favour.
Are you confident of those figures? You don't want to change your mind at all?
I'm as confident as I can be on those figures, yes.
Okay, here is the current opinion polling on the Republic. Now, the no opinions is 33%.
You're joking.
No. And the people in favour is 36, and the people against is 31.
Bloody hell.
So,
I'm really surprised at those numbers.
It's very, very low. So you were talking about Malcolm Turnbull wanting it, you know, to arise out of a groundswell of public opinion. Well, then that doesn't look...
Yeah, it doesn't look like it's going to happen, does it?
No. Isn't that a low figure? Only 36% in favour and against 31 and 33 don't care.
Yeah.
So,
I'm very surprised at those numbers.
Yeah. So, there needs to be more discussion on that one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Interestingly, Scott, they had a second question, which would be support for the Republic at the end of the Queen's reign. So would you support or oppose Australia becoming a republic at the end of the Queen's reign? So what do you reckon the percentages were then?
Well, given what the original percentages were, then there's probably 20% saying they've got no opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably 40... Odd. Yeah, you'd probably 40-odd would be in favour of becoming a republic once the Queen's gone.
Okay, so...
And the balance...
opposed.
The balance would be saying no.
So, with the Queen gone, 45% would support a republic, and 29 would be against. So, so the in favour jumps 9% from 36 to 45, but the against only drops by 2, and the no opinion drops a bit, so... So here's another one, Scott.
Yeah.
The question then was, do you think Australia is likely or unlikely to ever become a republic? Like, not whether you think it should be, but do you think Australia will ever become a republic? I'm going to beat you to this one. Only 56% say it's likely that Australia will ever become a republic. Like, 24% say it's unlikely. And the rest of don't know. Like, there's a very low opinion of, a very low projection. Only 56% think that Australia will become a republic ever. So,
I find that really bizarre.
Yeah. Flag. Changing the Australian flag. How many, just tell me the, how many you think would support changing the Australian flag?
Probably 40% would support changing it.
Close, 33.
Yeah.
With 55 okay. against. Changing the national anthem. How many would support changing the national anthem?
Oh, God. 30% would support it.
Very good. 28%. That's your first... I'll give you one mark for that one, Scott. There you go.
Okay.
And final question in the quiz, and this is relevant to our discussion the other day about changing the date of Australia Day. So how many people... would support changing the date of Australia Day?
I'd say 20%.
Very good. Another mark for that. 23%. With 59% totally opposed to changing Australia Day. So despite the recent hand-wringing by the left over Invasion Day, etc., only 23% of Australians would support changing the date of Australia Day. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. That is very interesting, yeah.
So that was the quiz, and the Republic's got some work to do. I guess it's just been an issue that's been asleep and needs some agitation. Well, Peter Fitzsimmons is the new sort of head of that pro-Republic movement, and I haven't heard much from him since he was appointed. Have you?
Well, I have, but see, I am a member of the Australian Republican
Movement.
I joined when Abbott knighted the Prince Philip. And, I'd been a closet Republican for a number of years and that sort of stuff, and we can get into the. If one of these days you want to bore our listeners with an hour-long argument, we can talk about the sort of republic we want.
Mm.
But, I have always been, since probably 18 months after the last referendum, I have been a closet Republican. And then when Prince Philip was knighted, I just spat the dummy and joined.
All right, well, just briefly, I've never queried you on this before, but in terms of the... so in the sense that the president would replace the Governor-General, are you in favour of the president being elected by the people or elected in some way by the parliament? What's your view?
I think I'm probably more inclined to go with election by the people than I am for the parliament.
Right.
However, if you could then come up with some sort of electoral college where you had, 1,000 people drawn at random from the electoral rolls or something like that, that mm-hmm. could then be the body that decides who the next president is, that would be fine to...
Right, okay.
Anyway, it's one of those things. Mm-hmm.
I don't really have a firm view. I just, whatever would be easiest to get it through and approved would suit me, and I figure you can always change that down the track. First steps first, we need a republic, so okay. Now, in the US of A, they've just... completed their first round of what's it called? Is it called the primaries? Or
primaries. Mm. Yeah, it was the Iowa caucuses.
Yeah, so this is where the where the members of the relevant parties are voting for who they want to be their representative for their party in the then presidential election later on.
Yes.
And Bernie Sanders is neck and neck with Hillary Clinton.
Yeah. Yes.
And I really like Bernie Sanders.
And you know what? Mm. There's a lot of Australians that do. Mm. I think that, you know, just I have read a fair bit of what he's written and that sort of stuff, and it's very hard to bag him out. I think that because America's had so much, what's the word I'm groping for, has lost so much of its way that they are probably going to need a dose of socialism to bring them back.
Mm.
You know, and even that, if you read actually what he's proposing,
mm.
it's not that bad.
No.
You know, it's really not. He's just a... You know,
he's not Fidel Castro.
He's by no means Fidel Castro.
Yeah.
He is probably what your Democrats were in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
You know, that golden era of the Americans that they always talk about, you know, the when you had unionized labor and all that sort of stuff.
Mm.
That's what he's talking about.
Mm.
You know, he said, you know, Sanders said General Electric, Boeing, Verizon have not paid federal income taxes between 2008 and 2013, during which they combined to make more than $102 billion in profits.
Mm.
Well, you know.
So the thing I like about him, well, he's been very consistent about inequality for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a hobby horse he's
Absolutely.
Just jumped onto. He's been on it forever.
No.
And the
yes.
straight talking is that he's just come out at a rally and he's named three companies. He said General
yeah.
Electric, Boeing, and Verizon have not paid any income taxes from 2008 to 2013, despite them making a combined $102 billion in profits. Like, not a single dollar of income tax by those
yeah.
three companies, despite $102 billion. And I just
yeah.
love the fact that he has named those three companies and said, under a Sanders administration, they are going to start paying taxes.
Yeah, and really, he's right. Mm. He's bang on the money. You know, you've really got to hit your corporates where they're making their money in the United States, so they should be paying their taxes yep. there.
See, I can accept, you know, that a company can have a bad year or a restructure or a write-down because of a collapse in commodity prices, or, you know, Qantas went through a bad year where they had to do
yeah.
a lot of stuff. Sure. But, like, these three companies, 2008 to 2013, 5 years?
Yeah.
It's just wrong.
Yeah, it is wrong.
Yeah, so
it really is wrong.
He makes the point here that today in America, one family, the Walton family, who own Walmart, they own more wealth than the bottom 40% of American people. That's just one family
yeah.
has more than 40% of... has more than what the bottom 40% has. That's...
Yeah, it's bloody criminal. It really is
wrong.
You
know, in the days of, you know, kings and queens and castles in England and pharaohs in Egypt, was there ever a point where one small group could have so much more than such a large group? Like, you know...
I would imagine there probably was, but even then the wealth of the royalty wasn't 40% of the population. So,
you know, like one family as much as what must be 80 million people? I don't know. It's hard to imagine. This is a very unequal society that we've ended up with. So that's good by Bernie. And I've got a link to an article here, Scott, that was from The Conversation. And I don't know if I sent it to you or not, by Anthony Ting, about war on tax avoidance.
Yes, you did. War on tax avoidance overlooks some obvious legal fixes.
So
yes.
apparently, and this is from Anthony Ting, who's an associate professor at the University of Sydney, and at some stage in the past few days, we signed some sort of multilateral agreement to exchange information with 30 other countries, including France, Germany, Ireland, etc., to allow exchange of information to start dealing with these multinationals who are transferring money from high-tax countries to low-tax countries. So that's good, but this is the only article I've stumbled across. I can't believe something as important as this. You don't see this in mainstream media, Scott.
Yeah, which is really bizarre. You would think that something like this, you know, signing up with 30 other nations to exchange information on tax avoidance, you'd think that would make it into the mainstream press, but no, it hasn't.
Like, I've been whinging about this for ages, so I reckon if it was there, I would have seen it, but, you know, we're in the conversation is where it's popped up. So the US has not participated in that. I'm a bit, wary of the US position on this. They seem to be not so keen for their multinational companies to be brought to account for this, but as Bernie Sanders has shown, you know, they're screwing the American government as well, so I don't know why the American government is keen on protecting these US multinationals, but
it is rather bizarre, isn't it, because it's it's really bizarre.
So if you're interested in this topic, two other things he talks about is that in the UK, they imposed a Google tax, is what it was called, which was designed to sort of overcome this transferring of profits. And as a result, Amazon has started to pay tax on its sales in the UK rather than in Luxembourg. So once the UK introduced the Google tax and applied it to Google, then Amazon voluntarily started paying tax. Like, just goes to show a bit of pressure, and these companies will have to comply.
Look, I mean, exactly. I mean, like, it's £130 million they've paid, which is quite small when you compare to the billions of pounds of income that's been generated out of the UK. But, you know, it's a start.
And he also talks about Chevron, which in Australia, so Chevron internationally is able to borrow money at 1.2%. But in the books of Chevron, the Australian subsidiary had to pay interest at 9% to overseas entities in the Chevron group. So, you know, there's another example of the ways that they, you know, shift money around. So that was appealed by the ATO, and it was adjusted down to 5%, which seems to me still not enough, but at least it's something. At least something's happening in this area to stop these multinationals getting away with this.
Well, I mean, you know, it's a positive move that we've signed this agreement and that sort of stuff. It really is. So we'll have to see where it lands, but you know, it's the right direction.
Did you watch Q&A at all the other night? Well, you watch it on the replay, don't you?
I watched it on the replay, and I haven't watched this week yet.
Oh, it's agony to watch, Scott. I mean, a bunch of Australians of the Year for various categories, including the Australian of the Year, and mixed with Stan Grant.
Yeah, I did hear that Stan Grant had been had made an appearance on the Q&A.
He
did make some reference to him possibly running for politics in the future.
Yes, yeah, he's angling that way. And yeah, once again, people are so easily impressed if they hear just that Q&A. You've just got to sound serious and cobble a few words together and show concern for minorities or whatever, and you'll get a round of applause from the crowd no matter what you say. I couldn't bear it anymore. Like, literally, they should have been wringing their hands at one point, bemoaning Australia. But anyway, because I remember we spoke about the Australian of the Year, and he was lumping together that we put people down because of their sex, their race, their religion and something else. And I made the point that, well, hang on a minute, amongst all those things that you've just lumped together, all of them are things that you have no choice as to whether you're of, you know, your gender or your sexual orientation or colour of your skin. But religion, you've got a choice. So that makes it different. And if you like that sort of discussion, then there's an article I found called Equality and Religion, When My Rights Conflict with Your Rights. And I've got a link to that on the website. And it talks about, you know, the fact that you really need to have a hierarchy of rights. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights, Article 2, refers to race, colour, sex, language, religion, political or other opinion, national or social origin, property, birth and other status are all factors that you should not be discriminated against because of. And the article makes the point, well, what if there's a conflict between those? Because, you know, a religious right might well be one that subjugates women, yet your rights, you know, to be not discriminated against on the basis of sex conflict with that. And it's a nice little article that kind of makes the same argument I was making, which is a commonly held one, of course, that it's a matter of choice, your religious belief, and the other things are not matters of choice. And so the things where you don't have a choice should take precedence over things where you have a choice. And so, yeah, if you're into that sort of argument about ethics and hierarchy of rights, then I recommend the article.
Yeah, it's a very good article, everyone. I'd recommend you read it anyway. It doesn't take long. It's only 2 pages. Mm. But, yeah, it is very interesting.
The final couple of sentences. For this reason, religion or any ideology should not be universally protected, but protected only when it does not conflict with the rights of others. At the point where it crosses that line into discriminatory practice, it should forfeit all protection.
Yeah, and I don't think there's anyone listening to this that would disagree with
that. No, I don't think so. So that was that article.
Yep.
Pope Francis and same-sex marriage. We should have mentioned him when we were talking about same-sex marriage, but the leader of the Catholic Church. And
he's also he's turning into the gift that keeps on giving, isn't he?
True.
He started out well and good and all that sort of stuff, but he's got out of control. But he said, in anticipation of Thursday's debate, the Pontiff told Vatican judges there can be no confusion between the family God wants and any other type of union. The family founded on indissoluble matrimony that unites and allows procreation is part of God's dream and that of his church for the salvation of humanity, he said on Friday.
Yes.
You know, it's just more, you know, nonsense saying, well, you know, you've got to get out of my way and, you've got to get out of my way
So he's basically saying same-sex marriage is not the family that God wants.
Yeah, exactly.
Just,
you feel like asking him, have you ever met the man, you know?
He's no doubt a well-meaning guy, but he's been indoctrinated and he's just, you know, just an example of the way that religion just corrupts people's thinking.
Yeah, agreed.
And, you know, at the same time, the Vatican is now recognising Palestine as a...
Yes.
Yes, recognising Palestine as an equal partner. So,
yeah.
So they've signed an agreement, and they officially recognise Palestine. And does it seem strange to you, Scott?
It did initially, but then I read this final line, some final couple of lines, that said this historic treaty hopes to secure the rights of Roman Catholic Church on Palestinian territories in exchange for support for the two-state solution.
Yes.
As it gives more political weight to Palestine. It also hopes to offer more safety to holy sites in Palestine that have been subject to vandalism in recent years. You know, it's peculiar.
So they're giving support. They were giving support now. On the basis of getting favoured access to holy sites down the track.
Yes. Which, I mean, Bethlehem and that sort of stuff is in Palestine. So, you know, it's just... I think it is just set up exactly as you said. They're getting in now so that they can get more favoured access to it down the track. Mm.
That article came to me from the 12th Man. Thank you, Paul, the 12th Man. And I know he's a big fan of Sam Harris, the American, you know, atheist blogger and podcaster, etc. And he has this thing about Israel and Palestine, the contrast between the two. He says that, you know, imagine the two groups fighting, and if the Palestinians put Palestinian children in front of them as like a human shield, that effectively stops the Israelis from shooting. But he said, could you imagine for a minute the opposite, that if the Israelis put their children in front of them, would that stop the Palestinians? And he said, of course not. Like, so, but just even more encouraged to fire away, so...
Well, yeah, I mean, I've also heard Harris say, you know, before that he said... that can you imagine a situation where the Palestinians were as well armed as the Israelis? Mm. And his argument is that they wouldn't stop, that they would drive until they got everyone into the Mediterranean. Yes.
Yep. So, so anyway, so that's the Pope supporting the Palestinians there. And Scott, I just thought I'd throw in a little bit of Mormon corner.
Absolutely.
When last we left the Mormons, we had Joseph Smith had found the book and had explained to everybody that they couldn't look at it because they would be killed, that he could translate it using the same system that he was convicted of fraud for only 18 months earlier.
Incredible. Yes.
So the interesting thing about the book, as he it's written in an what he called a reformed form of Egyptian rather than in Hebrew.
Yeah.
But the book was written by many ancient prophets by the spirit of prophecy and revelation. Basically, their words written on gold plates were quoted and abridged by a prophet historian named Mormon. And basically, in the book, Mormon gives the account of two great civilizations in the USA, okay. This is we're talking about two great civilizations on the plains of America here. One supposedly came from Jerusalem in 600 BC, which then split into two nations known as Nephites and Lamanites, and the other came much earlier when the Lord confounded the tongues at the Tower of Babel. So the people from the Tower of Babel who started talking in tongues and couldn't understand each other. They were the Jaredites, who were also came across. And after thousands of years, these people had developed incredible civilization, and they had chariots and weapons and breastplates and gold and all sorts of stuff and major battles, and all were destroyed except for the Lamanites. And they are the... who then went on to become the principal ancestors of the American Indians.
And they'd forgotten everything that they had been that they had brought with them from the Middle East.
Well, here's the thing, Scott. You can look at the DNA of American Indians and you can trace, you know, their movement, how they arrived in the Americas, and it's got nothing to do with the areas that Joseph Smith said, like it doesn't add up in the least. He also said that then some of them went to Polynesia. He claims Polynesians also come from this group. And when you're looking at the DNA and and genes of these people, there's absolutely no way anything he said is correct. And and these civilizations that supposedly had all this metalworking in terms of chariots and breastplates and swords and etc., not one single artifact, anything remotely like what he has described, has been found anywhere in America. Like, you don't just have these sorts of things and not have a few little pieces lying in the out somewhere. Like, it's just the greatest load of... It's the most pathetic fairy tale. So he writes that, and then he... then he's also just stolen... passages from the Bible. So he just grabs the Bible as well and starts reading bits of it and intermingling, you know, these stories with those. And they can tell that he has just copied, because they can even tell exactly what year the Bible was printed that he was reciting from, which was because of he actually quotes footnotes and things in there that never appeared in the early editions of the Bible. So it's just ridiculous to think that he was reading from some gold plates, because it's proven that he's reading from a document that was published in like the 1700s, because of it's an exact copy of one of the versions of the Bible running around at the time, certain passages. So he's just concocting a mishmash of a new history of Native Americans with bits of the Bible, and throwing in crazy stuff in terms of the afterlife, Scott. So so basically, sort of the Mormon heaven is a place called Kolob, K-O-L-O-B. And
Okay.
And it's not really clear, but Kolob is the name of the planet where God lives, or it's the star closest to heaven, or it's just a metaphorical symbol of Jesus, or no one really knows. Like, you get all sorts of different answers from Mormons, but probably a planet, Kolob, is as close as you're going to get. So that's kind of heaven. And you, Scott, have already been there, because we're all up there, and then we get transported down to Earth, and in the process, we unfortunately lose our memory of our pre-existence in Kolob, and it's then up to us to live a good Mormon life here on Earth, in which case we will then be returned up to Kolob, and it will depend on how well we've performed as Mormons, Scott, as to where we end up. So if we haven't done a good job as Mormons, we'll be in the Telestial Kingdom, which is the bottommost. So like the Mormon heaven's got sort of three levels. So the bottom level is Telestial Kingdom. So it's it's a low rent heaven or an upscale hell. So, you know, you could end up there. The next level up is the Terrestrial Kingdom. This is where all the non-Mormon religious people go, and where half-assed Mormons go. So if and then there's the Celestial Kingdom, and that's where the good Mormons go. And, of course, God is there with Jesus, sits on a blazing throne, and the streets are literally paved with gold. So it's pretty good there in the Celestial Kingdom. And while you're there, you get to be with your wives if you have sealed with them for life. So on Earth, you can have a more than just a marriage ceremony. You have a permanent sealing, S-E-A-L-I-N-G. And if you've done that, then your wife will join you in heaven. And there's this really weird thing where if you've been really good, then you and your wife and your children can create your own sort of Kolob-like planet where you create your own heaven, and it all happens again. It's all a bit confusing. But, there's a spirit prison, and there's an outer darkness. And interestingly, Scott, you know, you've got people who, you know, died before Joseph Smith started Mormonism. And, you know, it's not really fair that they spend 1,000 years in spirit prison. So what the Mormons believe is that those people can actually be baptized now, and that will that will get them out of the spirit prison that they're in. So that's one of the reasons why the Mormon Church is so big on family history and genealogy. You know, they're famous for having very good records of genealogy of people throughout the centuries. So
I thought that'd be more for the keeping an eye on you know, back in the days of polygamy.
Yeah, it could be. But they're certainly big on it. So every week, teenage boys and girls have the honour of being baptised in the place of dead people. So it's called the Baptism of the Dead. And it's giving those people then the opportunity to move out of the spirit prison into the celestial kingdom. So that happens on a regular basis in the Mormon Church. And of course, they don't ask the permission of the dead people. They just find dead people and start baptizing them there at the Mormon Church. And so much so that what they found out, well, the American Jewish Committee was not very happy when they found out that the Mormon Church was baptizing the murdered Jews of World War II. So they had to they had to contact the Mormon Church and say, hey, you can't baptize our Jewish people into your Mormon Church. They had to make them stop. And 10 years later, they found out that the Mormons were still doing it, like baptizing Holocaust victims, despite the wishes of the Jewish Church. Like, the nonsense of it is, it's unbelievable. So,
yeah, it really is.
And the just treading over people, like even Mitt Romney, so former presidential hopeful, he had an atheist father-in-law. And Mitt Romney, after his father-in-law died, he did a baptism of him. Like the height of these people. So so Bill Maher, again, another American sort of noted atheist, he held an unbaptizing ceremony in his show. And so that's a little bit more from Mormon Corner. And how crazy is that? And there's also a lot more nasty stuff, which I will mention next week, where the Mormons were involved in a massacre of some poor people. So,
yeah.
So there we go, Scott. I reckon that's probably going to bring us up to the 1 hour mark. So
it is. We're probably going to be a little bit over. So we'll
Once again,
hold off these couple of things till next week.
So once again, dear listener, if you are interested in having a chat with us on the podcast, send us a message and we'll give it a go and see how it works. Might be good. And now, if you're listening to the show and you've, you know, you're enjoying it, kind of every Thursday or Friday, you're downloading it and listening and you're really getting off on it, then hop onto iTunes and leave us a positive review. It's the least you can do. We don't ask for much. We don't ask for any money or applause or anything, but just, I suppose it is a form of applause. Okay, so that's all we're asking for, is just leave us a positive review, and that will help spread the word and tell your friends about us as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very good. All right, Scott. Well, that'll do us for tonight.
And I'll let you know if anyone
contacts us. And in the meantime, bye, everybody, and we'll speak to you next week.
Talk to you next week. Bye now.
Well, dear listener, did you enjoy that episode of the podcast? If you did, I've got a favour to ask. First up, tell some friends. Let them know about the podcast. You'll be discussing something at some time and you might be repeating something I've said. And when you're talking to your friends, say, hey, I heard this on this podcast and it's worth listening to. And maybe pick an episode that you think's a good one and direct them to it.
like grab their phone and go to their podcast app and search for Iron Fist Velvet Glove and subscribe on their behalf on their phone and just put the word out. The other thing is you could become a patron and support the show. So if you go to our website, you'll see a link to Patreon, and there are some different options for subscribing and paying per episode. And really, the amount that you pay depends on what you get from the podcast. So there's different levels ranging from $1.50 Australian to, I think, $10 and various ones in between. It's really, what do you think it's worth? Is it worth a cup of coffee? Is it worth more than that, less than that? Whatever you get out of it, because not everybody gets the same. Maybe you don't listen to the whole thing. Maybe you never talk about it with people. Maybe you really couldn't care less half the time whether the podcast is there. It just, it'll be different for everybody. So if you get a lot out of the podcast, contribute a bit more. If you don't get much, contribute less. But in any event, you can subscribe there. If you don't like the idea of a regular subscription, the website has a link to a PayPal donation. So you could just do a one-off donation every now and again. So there you go. It'd be good to spread the word, get a few more listeners. And that way, look, if we ended up getting more listeners and more money, we could do maybe a second episode or more special episodes, provide some more content. So it's up to you. If you think it's worthwhile, let people know. Thanks.